it's some you know, the improvement in this group within 1 week to 10 days has been honestly remarkable. And all three times I say to the boys, I wish I could coach them at Clubland, because you know, there's a lot of energy in the group, there's a lot of positiveness, and there's a lot of will to win. So, you know, obviously the preparation has been only for, you know, 1 week. We've only had one game together as an international game as a team. But to gel the team together, it's been a, you know, a good week for us with the preparation in Malaysia, getting used to, obviously, getting used to each other as players, but also coaches, learning about the growth of the Socceroos with these boys, and with the players, getting to know the coaches, but most of all, getting to know each other. You know, two of the goals we've conceded in the games have been around confusion, the players not playing together, and this is one of the, you know, one of the most important ingredients is preparation is vital in this situation, especially when, you know, there's not been any games in the past for these players.
So what relevance, or to what importance on Australian player development is it to reach the Olympic Games and to play in these qualifying competitions? Because there's been a lot of conjecture about, you know, youth internationals versus availability.
I've done a lot of work behind the scenes with working groups and with at the board meetings, and it's crazy. So I'll give you some stats. I'll give you one stat that will show you how important the this level of preparation or this level of international football is. Every other country has a 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, 23s national team. We have the 17s, we have the 20s, we have the 23s. So if I told you that 87% of Socceroos went through an Olympic campaign, without an Olympic campaign or without this generation without this generation getting at least 15 to 20 international games under their belt, they don't play for the Socceroos. 87% of players that have been to the Olympics have become Socceroos. That's how important the development is of this age group to play. Now, if they're not playing at Clubland, we need to find an alternative, and that is then maybe the government and maybe the head organisation need to provide a way to get these kids to play international football. So I can't stress enough, and that's, Tom, at the end of the day, that's why I'm here. I'm here for, to first and foremost, to help the person, which is the players, to help the game, which is international football, and to help, try to help kids achieve their lifelong dreams of a goal in their life of going to the Olympics. And to be called an Olympian is a wonderful feat, but the most important thing is to support these kids and make sure that they are given every opportunity to become an Olympian, which shows when you become an Olympian, you have an 87% chance to become a Socceroo.
You, from memory, I think, are the last coach to have coached an Australian team at the Olympic Games in Beijing in 2008. Do you see any similarities between the squad you've got now, the level of experience, the level of ability, and the level of preparedness compared to the squad you took to Beijing in 2008?
Yeah, I see the squad has been better. Mainly because when I coached the Olympic team in 2007, there was no NYL. So you had only there was no NYL. In a, I think it was an 8 to 10 team competition. So the kids that were part of the A-League then weren't playing. I think Mark Milligan was probably, and Adrian Layer were the only two that were playing consistently. But since then, obviously, the A-League clubs have got more professional, and the kids are in a good professional environment. The one negative is in 2008, I had probably 30 games for that Olympic team. Don't quote me on that, but check it out. That we went to quite a number of competitions, tournaments around the place, and if you include the World Cup, the Olympic qualifiers in those days was home and away. So we played 16 home and away games. So I think it was around 30 games that team played to get to the Olympics. This team at this moment has played one game, and the preparation is the detail that is very important of getting to know each other and playing together. And when you compare it to other nations around Asia, we are well behind in that. But we've got a wonderful group of boys. We are ready. Tomorrow, we got one last session today. It's great to see that, you know, the newer players. And as I said, Michael, for me, this job is, you know, to grow to the Socceroos, and that's why I'm here, because a lot of these, I see that some of these players especially, they need to come through and get into the Socceroos squad quickly. You know, we've had retirements at Socceroos level. We've had injuries, and we need more depth. And the only place that depth can come from is from under. We can't go and just, you know, get players like you can in clubland where you can get foreigners to fill a void. It's all about Australian passports. So these kids are in great shape. Mentally, I can see that they're ready. There will be no excuses. and we're ready. We'll be ready for Friday night.
My question is, you're obviously the Socceroos coach as well as the Olleroos coach. So how much can we expect the Olleroos to play Socceroos tactically, structure, the rest?
It's a good question, Dave. It'd be a little bit different, because I always try to play my team to the strength of the, you know, tactically to the strength of the players. And there's different strengths here of the players that we have that, you know, the Socceroos don't have. So, you know, as I said, this wasn't part of, you know, when I took the job for the Socceroos, this wasn't part of the job at all. I could see what was in front of this squad when I looked at it, the Olympic team campaign. I could see that there was no game, there was no preparation, so I wanted to help. And by that, I mean, you know, most of the players are based in Australia. I can see the players every weekend. A lot, I think, out of the squad that I brought over, four out of the 16 A-League players are only playing every week. The other 12 are on the bench. So, you know, it's important that I felt that for the growth of the Socceroos, that if I could get to know these kids better and quicker, and they get to know me and my staff, so all my staff, the Socceroos staff, it's not only me that's here doing this for, you know, to help the kids, they're also here, that they get to know us, that when they come up to Socceroos level, then they will know what to expect.
Hi, Arnie, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm well. I wanted to ask you, now that we don't have the FFA Centre of Excellence, whose responsibility is it to develop the next generation of players coming through? And if it's the A-League clubs, do you think that they know that that's one of their KPIs?
First and foremost, I don't think that the A-League necessarily is a development league. The kids have to be good enough to play in the A-League. But what's underneath that? So, you know, it's a long conversation you can have. I've put things forward to FFA board and to the working group that what I believe that could help the game and get 30 kids or 30 players playing every weekend for each club. And, you know, it's more about, you know, when they don't play, whoever they are. And I'm, you know, you can talk about 30-year-olds. You talk about 25-year-olds, whoever they are, every weekend, they need to play football. They need to play a game. And if they're not, and they're just sitting in the grandstand and watching every week or laying on the beach because they're not in squads, then it's no good for anybody. So it's another conversation for another day, but I'm here to help these boys I'm here to help these boys achieve their goals. And, you know, these kids, you know, they clearly want to play for their country. They love to play for their country. as I did, and as I'm proud to coach these boys. And so for me, you know, it's an honour to be here with these boys. And as I said, there's a lot of energy. They're a great bunch of boys, and I know they're enjoying every day.
Thanks for taking my question, Arnie. In terms of the forthcoming opponent, obviously Cambodia, we saw certainly at senior level that Asian opposition we struggled to break down, or the Socceroos struggled to break down. So how do you envisage that this one will play out? Do you think that they might sort of sit back?
Yeah, look, I think that they've got their way of playing. It'll be interesting to see how Kisuki Honda coaches them. Even though he plays in our A-League, and yet he's coaching them. So it's, you know, I came over and I watched Cambodia play. That's how seriously I've taken the tournament. I spent my own time to come over here for a week where they were playing in a pre-tournament, East Asian Games. And, you know, they're well set up. Sorry, East Asian nations have come a long way. That's all I can say is that there is no easy games, and that's why when I selected the squad, we had to select our strongest squad. We can no longer take our second string, so-called second string squads to these type of tournaments. So it's going to be a wonderful experience for the boys. I believe it's sold out with 45,000 people. That will create a wonderful atmosphere, and it's going to be an exciting night for our boys. So, you know, I do believe that with a couple of players that we've got here, that that you know, if they do play a block defence, it's very deep. That we've got a couple of good players that are great in individual actions. And Reno Piscopo, he's been very impressive. Lockie Wales, that are great in a 1v1 situation. Joey Campness in a 1v1 situation, and then we've got some good number 10s in Riley McGree, Denny Jeanroux, with three good number 9s. So, look, at the end of the day, we've got some very good attacking players. We've got a very healthy squad. The tactical part of the game is obviously a good part of the game, but the biggest part of the game is the mental side of it. And mentally, the boys are in good shape. They feel good. They managed to acclimatise to the weather after the 7 days we've been here. So, you know, they're in a positive mindset, which is very, very important, and we'll keep them that way.
Yeah, you just touched a little bit on the adapting to the conditions over there. We know it's going to be hot, a bit cooler maybe towards kickoff, but how is that going to affect or sort of change the way you sort of approach the game in terms of it's going to be, you know, full on from the start, or we have to sort of tweak that mid-game and sort of deal with those conditions?
Yeah, look, it's as I said, the 7 days that we've been in Malaysia and here, we've used it to acclimatise. And, you know, all the sports scientists and the statistics and the analysis shows that you need at least 7 days to acclimatise to this change in conditions. So, you know, the Australian boys have come from a warmer climate and they feel good. The European boys have come from snow. In Holland at the time that Gearsbash came and Harry Suter came from England. So, you know, they may take an extra couple of days to acclimatise, but that was the whole purpose of coming that week early, to give these kids the biggest opportunity, because they've only got one opportunity in their
You are
in
muted.
Their career, because it's under 23s to achieve a big goal for themselves by becoming Olympians. So, you know, as I said, they're in good mindset. Great environment. They're all happy. They're smiling. We'll keep them that way till they get out on the pitch.